the way I think about this is the protocols, is how you structure your environment in order to be able to be inclusive. If you just put the child on the spot and say, okay, you answer, you need to talk. You know, it's like putting the flashlight in front of the student and say, please talk, right? And that's, nobody's gonna feel very comfortable doing that.
Season 11? How did that happen? Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Highest Aspirations. It is season 11 that we are kicking off. My name is Steve Sofronis, and I am so happy to be back speaking with some of the most passionate, knowledgeable, and inspirational people in the world of multilingual education, and hopefully inspiring you to do the amazing work that you do day after day. This season, we'll cover a variety of important topics, including fostering motivation among students, empowering teachers and students with the right blend of structure and agency, nurturing strong relationships with students and their families, and so much more. But these conversations are just the entry point into a wide variety of free, high-quality multimedia content. A little secret, when we started the podcast, we had no idea that we'd be creating all of this content from each of the episodes, but really, the conversation is just the first step. We transform each episode into digestible blog posts, useful graphics, and compelling posts on social media, and then we put them all on our EL community page. And a shout out to our team who does all of that great work behind the scenes. They're really doing amazing stuff. So if a podcast is not your thing, or you have colleagues for whom a podcast is not their thing, know that you can go to the EL community and find all that information at elevationeducation.com/ELcommunity. Speaking of community and social media, I'm excited to announce the launch of our new Elevation Educator Facebook group. The group's primary goal is to foster meaningful connections among educators who support English learners in their schools. In this inclusive space, we encourage members to engage in thoughtful discussions, exchange valuable insights, and share best practices that empower multilingual students on their language, academic, social, and emotional journeys. This group welcomes all levels of expertise, whether you're an experienced educator, an advocate for English learners, or you're just starting in this work. Please join us. To join, just search for Elevation Educator Community under the Groups tab on Facebook. Then go ahead and post on the group to let us know what you learned from this episode and others. And we'll have lots of prompts on there and polls, etc., to get the conversation going. Now on to episode one of Highest Aspirations. Here are some of the questions we will discuss. What is the difference between all student talk and student discussions? How can teachers plan for meaningful discussion opportunities for all students, and particularly for multilingual learners? What research-proven strategies are there for creating, maintaining, and repairing community and relationships in the classroom? We discuss these questions and much more with Dr. Mariana Castro. This is her second appearance on Highest Aspirations, and we're really happy to have her again. She's the director of the Multilingual Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is also a lead curriculum designer and instructor for the Discussion Project. She is a significant contributor to our EL community and beyond. You can read her full bio on our show notes and in the blog post featured on our EL community, so definitely check that out. With that, we hope you enjoy our discussion with Dr. Mariana Castro. Is it a discussion or is it a conversation? I guess you can figure that out after this episode. Mariana Castro, thank you so much for joining us again on Highest Aspirations.
Thank you, Steve, for inviting me again.
Yeah, of course. So I was just looking at the blog post that we did the first time. I have no idea when that was. It could have been 2 years ago. It could have been a year ago. It could have been, oh, I see it right here, January 2022. So it actually wasn't as long ago as I thought. But it was on advancing equity in professional learning, which I thought was great. We did that with Silvio Romero Johnson, your colleague. And this time we were actually looking at getting you and Lynn, pronounce Lynn's last name for me, Mariana?
Glick.
Okay, Glick's on here as well, but she was busy. So we have you to talk about the discussion project, which I'm really excited to dive into. And for those people who don't know what the discussion project is, and there are probably many in the audience, let's kind of start there. How did it start? What is its primary goal or goals? And I guess like I would ground it in this question. What problem were you trying to solve with this?
Yeah, I would say that the two problems that we were trying to solve were both engagement and also equity in voices. And it all started several years ago. I work at the University of Wisconsin, and We did a climate survey, and one of the things that we found out is that students were not feeling very connected to campus, especially when it came to the teaching and learning that was happening.
These are university students.
So these started in higher ed, yes, mm-hmm. university students, and we started thinking about what can we do so that that there can be equity of voices, because people sometimes even said that they felt that they couldn't necessarily even share what they thought because they were afraid of what people were going to think, or sometimes there weren't spaces for them to talk. In some cases, it wasn't even expected that their voice was going to be part of the teaching and learning in the classroom. So our Dean Diana Hess, started to think about her background is in thinking about political discussion and really democracy in the classrooms, and how can we have classrooms that are more democratic, where different voices are coming in. Mm-hmm. So she started thinking about creating these professional development opportunity for instructors at university level to engage in creating spaces that were safe for students to participate in and to express their thoughts and opinions. As they start working on this, the pandemic happened, right? So then all of a sudden everybody was going online, and one of the questions was like, okay, here we are saying that we should really have discussion center classrooms, but we're all online. What does that look like? So we did a shift, and we started to think through what would this look like on online. So when I joined the discussion project, this is what was going on. We were trying to think about how to make online courses dynamic, flexible, and equitable, where people could really have a space to create their voice. And actually, when we came back from the pandemic, it was great, because at that time, we had learned so much.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, we were able to do this online, so it can only get better when we do it face-to-face. And we created this face-to-face program. So in some ways, the discussion project is a professional development opportunity that's starting in higher ed. And then we thought like, okay, we should do this for the K-12. So we did, created a program that was specifically for students who were sixth grade through 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, parallel to that, because we are at university, we engage in research, in thinking about how this particular project, this particular professional development, actually impacted the practice of instructors and teachers, and how it impacted, most importantly, the students who were in those classes.
Yeah.
So it's both professional development and research, and it started in higher ed, but we found that there's a lot to learn from both, like both from what we do in high schools to apply in higher ed, as well as what has worked in higher ed and how to apply it and prepare our middle and high school students for higher education.
Yeah. So let's dissect that a little bit, because there's a lot there. First of all, I love it that this is a higher ed thing that number one was based on feedback from students. And then you looked at it and said, let's do something about it. And then it went over to 6 to 12, which is great. And then the idea of sort of doing the research, it sounds like, while it's actually happening on the ground, is a huge benefit, because usually we see, or I've seen, like, as mostly I have some research experience, but my background, as you know, is as a high school teacher before I came to Elevation. And so one of my biggest issues was that there was always like a gap between the research and the practice, but there's no gap in this situation because it's happening concurrently. Am I on the right track there?
That's correct. And I think what is interesting is that the type of research that we're doing is on impact. Not just it's on the most important, what we consider the most important thing is on the why that we started this. So it becomes kind of like closing the cycle of development, and in trying to say, what is it that we have to share with the rest of educators who might be thinking of the same thing? You know, like when I was a high school teacher, like you were, and I remember constantly thinking like, okay, yeah, there are these kids who are always engaged, that always participating. Mm-hmm. But there are also these group of kids who are just kind of showing up, sitting down, sometimes even behaving really well, but they're really not engaging with
Oh, sure.
or with each other. And in many ways, our students, and this is part of the research, part of what we learn about it, in many ways, students are really needing certain elements for learning. They're really needing to be connected, and not connected just to the teacher, but connected to peers.
Yeah.
And peers. And that engagement is what's helping and facilitating the learning that happens. And they're also saying, like, one of our big ideas is the community, the creating the community. And in order to do that, you need to have certain guardrails, you need to have certain norms. So this idea of social emotional learning that's happening, students are not just saying, yeah, that's a good idea, but they're saying, we need that. We need to be part of this group of people in order to learn with that group of people. So it's been great to read about it in the literature, to create something that we feel is going to help, and then to do the research and say, wow, it is helping. It is exactly what the students are asking for.
Yeah. What a great model. And it really, like, there's probably nobody that's surprised that, yes, we need a community to learn, but if anybody is, then the research backs it up, and it keeps happening like that over and over again. So I want to get back to this community piece, because I think this is really, really important. But for now, I given that the vast majority of listeners to this podcast are people who are working with multilingual learners, I just want to kind of focus in a little bit on that, because obviously that's a group that has been, you know, historically sort of marginalized from discussions, usually unintentionally, just because of what is considered a language barrier by many. So I want to just ask you, how does the discussion project sort of define and conceptualize effective classroom discussion in the context of multilingual learners? Like, what is that? Is there a formula for what that looks like? Do you start there or no?
Well, I think it always starts with engagement, right? Like, I think we have like this tagline that says, learn to discuss, discuss to learn. So we start from the premise that student talk is great to have in classroom. Student talk is necessary for many different purposes. But there's one type of this student talk. So we think about discussion as one specific type of student talk. So it's not just every time somebody says something, but we're thinking about discussion as really focused inquiry. So in thinking, like, really digging into teaching and learning. And it's focused inquiry on the content, and it happens through both speaking and listening. We have a lot of people, and it's true, we learn something by listening, but it's in the engagement, the speaking and listening, that truly deeper inquiry, deeper understanding can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And because for multilingual learners, sometimes speaking and learning is one of those skills that they may, teachers might think like, they haven't quite achieved that, so I'm not going to put them on the spot. Sometimes we're robbing students the opportunity to participate through speaking and listening. Or we might say, oh, somebody's just really shy, we're not going to push them. But think about reading and think about writing. Those are skills that we need to both learn and to share what we know, right? So when you say, oh, that child is not very good at writing, we're not going to say, oh, let's not make them write.
Right.
Right? But often we do this with speaking. So the idea of discussion is, again, that you are allowing and creating spaces so that students can speak and can listen and can around focused inquiry, and that is purposeful to the learning, that is broadly collaborative and therefore leads to the deeper understanding. And the piece that I love about this whole definition is that the understanding happens through the analysis of different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that everybody has something to contribute, which means that everybody should be participating. So there's nobody that is like, oh, everybody can talk, but maybe you don't have to talk. Because if you're not participating, if you're not engaging, you're not learning. And I think that that's one of the big keys. That's one of my big passions and pulls for the discussion project, because it's so inclusive and, you know, and it's around language.
Yeah, this is so interesting. You just brought up something that I don't think should be so mind-blowing to me, but it is. It's the idea that we really push on reading and writing, which are largely, I mean, writing, you're producing something, obviously, but it's passive in that you're not like communicating usually with others. I guess you could say now that with, you know, with feedback and everything and it being so simple with Google Docs and everything that you are, but it doesn't have that kind of visceral reaction that that forcing or really pushing somebody to have a discussion does. And just a quick, like, I can remember, man, this is gonna make me sound terrible, but I can remember some of my students being in tears, you know, because I was pushing them to do something in a course that was an advanced course. And it was really important. They were learning Spanish that they speak. And you have to be able to establish, and this is probably where the community comes in. We'll get into that. You have to be able to put together a community that is going to be supportive of that. And you as the educator, I think, have to be supportive of that. And I think I was. And all, those students actually thanked me for giving them the opportunity to do those things over time. But man, that was really, really hard. And I was an experienced teacher and I knew what I was doing. So what I'm getting to here is like, how does the discussion project, I guess I'll ask that question, support educators in structuring discussions and crafting the kinds of questions that are inclusive and accessible, particularly for multilingual learners, but also like, how does it help them overcome that fear of, I don't want to push too hard, because that's real.
Yeah. So that's where the discussion project has several components. One, like you mentioned, how do we create community? And so that's something that we keep coming back. And it's not just the creation of community, but it's maintaining community and it's in some times repairing community. Mm-hmm. So that is a very intentional focus throughout the course. And there's ways that we bring, for example, norms, and we talk about working agreements, and we talk about ways in which the students feel part of the community once they're participating in it. So it's kind of like this, in order to be part of the community, you participate, but by participating, you become part of the community. So it's kind of like a cycle there. It's also about the way I think about this is the protocols, is how you structure your environment in order to be able to be inclusive. If you just put the child on the spot and say, okay, you answer, you need to talk. You know, it's like putting the flashlight in front of the student and say, please talk, right? And that's, nobody's going to feel very comfortable doing that. So it's all about the planning for how you're going to create that space. And it's usually two important things. Is one of them is protocols, is how you choose particular protocols that are going to scaffold that participation. So something as easy as saying, okay, here are my directions. I put them in visually. I give time for students to read them before I talk about them. Then I talk about them. Everybody has a role to make sure that the timing is okay, that there's a facilitator, that kids learn how to engage in communication, everything to sometimes giving them time to just think about what they will talk about and have them write about it before you ask them to even turn and talk to the person sitting next to them. So there's a lot of little like skills that we provide, but there's also a lot of true and tried protocols that we know work, and that they work, of course, for specific purposes and in specific situations. And there's some considerations about that. So what we do in the discussion project is we share a protocol. People actually experience the protocol as participants. And then we give time to apply it and plan for applying it. So part of the during the time that we're together, we do the full cycle of learning from getting the new knowledge all the way to applying the new knowledge and then reflecting, okay, what happened? And the part that the more you plan, the better you get, if you have to take a detour, it's kind of like having a map, right? You have your map, you know where you're going to go. And if you plan your route, it's okay to take a detour.
Sure.
Because you can come back and you're not all of a sudden lost over here.
Yeah.
The other piece is that you repeat it. Like sometimes I remember when I was back in the school district, someone told me, oh, small groups. I tried that once and it didn't work. And, you know, this idea that you're going to try it once and it's going to be like magic and you're going to get it. And it's the opposite, right? You need to try, you need to tweak. And sometimes what works for one group, that doesn't work for another group. And that's, to me, that's the beauty, the excitement of teaching. And the third piece that I wanted to talk about is questions, thinking of how you scaffold questions. So sometimes you might do more close-ended questions to get people comfortable with the content, to make sure everybody knows it. And then you start opening them up so that people can start saying, oh, I can't just find that the answer to that in my text. Or vice versa, you start with a really open question so that people can use their prior knowledge. The key is always ordering the questions or sequencing them so that that it increases the inquiry, because inquiry is the means to the discussion. No, it's not the end. But also that you give opportunities for students to connect it to their lives, to connect mm-hmm. it to their reality, so that they can find it's not just the inquiry, but their own curiosity and their own understanding, making meaning of what they're reading. That connection, that is like almost like a triangle, because the last piece is the connection to the content, right? We want students, and this is across all the different standards that we see, we always want students, if they're going to make a claim, to have the evidence. If they're going to make a statement, to find something that can back that up. So we want that connection with, that's why we say purposeful. We want that connection with the content itself. So it's both my experience, but it's also what I'm learning in the content. And that helps students kind of move both academically, but it also gives them, if you can think about multilingual learners, lots of modeling of language, because mm-hmm. they're reading, they're talking to people, they're expressing, they're trying out language. And it's always both individually, then in small groups, and then in a larger group. So it scaffolds it naturally for multilingual learners, which, I mean, anything that I've said as a language person, you can imagine, it's like, oh yeah, for multilingual learners or anybody who's learning language, they need opportunities to think about the language, to practice it, and to try and play with new language as well.
Sure. Yeah, again, a lot there. And I like come back to like, there's two sort of three word expressions that you use there that I think are really important. One is learn, teach, reflect. I mean, that model that you're employing that is, again, backed by research and one that works. And if it's, you know, used correctly, gives teachers a lot of kind of repetitions with what they need to do in every aspect of what they need to do. And the other one that I want to kind of transition with, and I was going to save the community piece till the end, but I think it's probably a good time to get into it now, because you mentioned the important, and I love what you said. You said creating, maintaining, and repairing communities. Yeah. And I think that we hear create and maintain. I'm not sure we create a whole, or we talk a whole lot about repairing, which probably for everybody at some point in the school year needs to happen. So yes. I'm thinking about how I'm going to kind of articulate this into a coherent question. But basically, I'm interested in learning how you all in the discussion project think about encouraging your participants to improve the community, or to create a community, to nurture it. But most importantly, what happens and what do you need to do when things go in a direction that, you know, you may not want it to go to, and that's that repairing piece.
Yeah. One of the things that I loved about working in the discussion project was that we were using both literature, so things that people already have studied and know and have tried and have come to conclusions about, but we were also using a lot of data, so student mm-hmm. voice. So for both, we work with a high school in Colorado, and we also work, of course, for the higher ed part, we work with students here at the University of Wisconsin. But we asked them to talk to us about times when community had failed them. And we specifically talked to students who felt that they weren't part of what they would consider the mainstream of the classroom. So we talked to, and so we created scenarios from those experiences, and we have teachers. So at the very beginning, we start with just student data about just discussion, right? So, and we talk about how to build a community. Throughout, we talk about the purpose of norms and working agreements. But towards the end of the course, we come back to that idea of repairing, and we come up with case scenarios for teachers to really think through.
What's an example of one of those scenarios? I'm so curious. Like,
everything from, you know, we have a student who is a multilingual learner and is very well behaved and polite, you're having an issue with the other adult in class because they don't want to participate. Or another one is a multilingual learner who wants to participate, but nobody wants to work with them. Or sometimes we have students who have been misgendered, and the student doubles down. Or we have people who ask a student from a, a particular minority background to talk on behalf of their whole group.
Mm-hmm.
So those are different ones, and people actually read the cases and get together with groups. They choose which case, and we give multiple opportunities for them to engage with different cases, and we come up with what is the appropriate thing to do for the teacher. And there's never the right answer, as you can imagine. But towards the end, we come up with particular guidelines that the group itself puts together, but that you can start seeing a pattern after multiple groups have put together. And one of the things is when it's your mistake as a teacher, you need to own it.
Own it, yep, yep.
And then you need to kind of circle back with students. You need to also make the, whenever it's a mistake that happens in the classroom, is that you have to not just, you need to name it. You need to address it. You can't just kind of, you know, push it under the rug.
Yeah.
And sometimes it happens and you don't have time to react, but then you come back and just reflect with groups, taking the opportunity to make it a learning experience. It shouldn't be a gotcha, because then you're breaking again the community. You're not helping solve the problem, and you're like disrupting it more. So there are like certain guidelines that we talk about, and that they come consistently, but it's about giving also teachers kind of like the confidence. Sometimes teachers, you know, they weren't prepared to work on situations of conflict. Yeah. So it's like, how do we do it? And also empowering them by giving them time to think through it and come up with solutions. Our teachers are amazing people. I always say that teachers can do any job in the world because you learn so many skills.
Yeah.
So many times during these conversations, they come up with better opportunities to repair that community than we could have thought of. So I think a lot of the time that we spend is both engaging in discussion and learning from each other.
Yeah, you know, and it's getting together and going through some of those scenarios has to be really, really insightful and really powerful. And I can't help, it's not lost on me that like a lot of those solutions come through probably really high quality discussions that people are having, and they're actually modeling what they're trying to do with their students. And then as you were speaking, I couldn't help but make, I don't know why I'm so stuck on creating, maintaining, and repairing and learn, teach, reflect, but it struck me that the reflecting is also the repairing. Like when you take the time to reflect on something, that's where you have a situation where you realize something maybe you didn't realize while the class was going on because you're so busy, as you said, and involved in what you're doing. But if you're reflecting in your practice and you're reflecting in your professional development, that gives you the opportunity to catch any issues that may have come up before they kind of fester. Because you're right, if you leave those things under the rug, I mean, it really can create a very difficult classroom environment, yeah. And any kind of environment. I mean, that's the same situation in the community that I work in, or probably the one that you work in as well. So this is all, as usual, it's all good life lessons as well.
Yeah. The one thing is their reflection is one of the most important pieces, but it has to be tied to action,
mm-hmm.
because students are observing their learning, not just by what they're hearing you about the content, but on how people are reacting to when they feel like they've been othered, or when they feel like they've been put outside of the community, of the circle. So I think the action piece is the important piece here, along with the reflection. And many times teachers, I mean, you've been a teacher, we're so busy, right? Like we're like trying to talk to students and maybe try to go to the bathroom in between, that we don't have time to do this reflective practice. So for a lot of them, it's such a gift to have these either 3 full days or 7 modules where they come and really talk to other teachers. And again, this thing, we don't do it at the very beginning. We do it towards the end so that people have had time to create their own community. You know, and as you were talking about, like, yeah, we're having discussions, but the discussions are about content. So every activity that we have is both content and process. So because, you know, like there's so much that we could say that we have to make sure that there's always what we call the content win and also the process win, so that teachers feel like it's worth their time.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you talk about kind of the cohort and how it all works, we haven't talked a whole lot about that. And I'll link to the website so people can know exactly kind of how that works. It's probably a better way to go about learning about that. But I do want to ask one question about that. As people have kind of gone through this process, I'm curious if you could share any like success stories or examples of how the discussion project has kind of effectively not only helped people, you know, initiate and create deep discussions and meaningful discussions, but also built that community and collaboration that we're talking about.
So we've worked with, I'm going to tell you, like, we went to North Carolina and we worked with a group of people who were working in the same district. So you would think like, oh, they work in the same district. There's a big community, sense of community. And as you know, just because you work in the same building doesn't mean that there's community there. So
silos.
Yeah. And I remember we had these two math teachers at the beginning of, like, right at the beginning. My colleague John Zolak was amazing. He came and they came to us and they said, you know, we're really excited to be here, but we have to tell you, we're math teachers, so this is probably not, you know, appropriate to us. Plus, you know, we do have some multilingual learners, but we feel it's okay because math has its own language. Mm-hmm. And we just said, oh, well, yeah, but we've heard this multiple times. So we said, like, we're just glad you're here. As we go through, let us know if there are some pieces that you feel are helpful. Well, by the end of the course, it was the opposite. They were like, oh my gosh, I never thought about all the language that is used around math. Oh my gosh, there are all these ideas that we're going to go and implement. And because we work together, we can do it across a whole grade level. And to me, that was a recognition at so many levels. It was both the content demands, you know, for language, but also that it is worth having multiple voices in a math class. Mm-hmm. That still, just because it's math, it doesn't mean that there can't be equity. And the way math curriculum is written today, students need to be able to share how they've come to particular solutions. And it provides them with so many skills. And at whole district level, it also provided them with the opportunity to be consistent, to provide consistency. So if I'm a multilingual learner, I'm not going to go into somebody's class and be like, oh, what a great experience I had, but I only have that experience once a day. But because all the teachers were coming, they were like, oh, and now I know that in every class that I go to, I can expect to be engaged. I know the expectation is that I'm going to mm-hmm. be part of that community. The expectation is not going to be that I'm going to just come in and just show up and sit and I'll get my attendance. So that expectation to participate is also, I feel it was another big response. So I consistently, as you can imagine, see the connections between language and discussion, because that's where the learning happens.
Sure.
And the other piece that I've had and I've seen over and over, and this was for a higher education. I'll just tell you, just because it applies in a particular way. But in higher ed, we have these classes that are like 100, 150 students.
Yep, I remember those.
You remember those, right?
And I don't remember them as well as the small classes that I had, to be honest with you, but I remember them.
But what was great is that the instructor came to us and says, I would like to do, and he was going to do a particular protocol that we had worked with. It's called the final word. And we were like, well, we should recommend it for, this was the opposite, all saying like for 30, 35 students, like, but you want to do it, we'll help you do it. And we helped him with the planning. He planned it, he organized it, he went and did it. And Lynn went and observed, and it was a total success. Huh. So he was like, okay, this can be done regardless of the group. And the reason why that connects, because other people who have come who are not instructors, but are instructional leaders. So they're coaches or they're administrators in K-12 systems. They're like, oh, you know, I can use this protocol for our staff meeting, or I can use this protocol for our PLC, like mm-hmm. our learning community meetings. So we've seen how people transform and apply and modify just everything. And that is very exciting, because once you give away something and people make it theirs, that's when you know it's going to make a difference.
Yes.
They are like afraid to say like, oh no, you gave it to me like this, I can't change it. We say these are gifts, take the protocols, make them your own, try them a few times. It's not always going to work in the first time. And teachers, they're just excited to give these resources.
Yeah, I would say it's like everybody has different tools in their kitchen and different tastes. And when you get the recipe, you don't have to do it exactly the way it was delivered. But if you feel like you do, then you're constrained. And you know, it took me a long time, I think, as a teacher to realize that I can take things that are given to me and adapt them to suit my needs and to suit the needs of my, more importantly, my students. And it's the same with cooking. I mean, I love to cook as well, but it took me a long time to break free from, I need to use this exact recipe. And having a structure in place where you're working with other people, I have to assume, helps you develop, because so much of this is, like I said, like repetitions, and then it becomes muscle memory. And then you develop some sort of expertise where you're not relying on everything all at once. But it's like, that's a bit of a slow process. And along the way, you need to have hooks and moments of success and moments of kind of enlightenment, which I feel like, based on what you've told us, the discussion project provides these educators, which is great.
And I think there's another part to this repetition, that you could do the same thing over and over and over and never get better. The piece that makes it better is the feedback. So this goes to the formative assessment piece. As you know, I worked with assessment for a long time when I was at WIDA. And one of the things is that we've tried to do in the discussion project is thinking about, how do you assess discussion? And the word assess produces a lot of scary thoughts for a lot of people, because sometimes you think, oh, I'm going to test it, or I'm going to have to give a grade. And while that is possible, it's much more for our purposes, like, because we're saying we want to get better at discussion, both for the students, but also us as facilitating discussion. The only way you can do that is through that formative assessment process, in which you try and you reflect, but you need feedback.
Yeah.
Be able to reflect on that. And sometimes the reflection helps you do self-assessment, and then you have your criteria. But sometimes there are other ways to observe and take notes and collect data, so that then you can better reflect based on what actually happened. And it's great when we can share those resources also with students, so students can learn to notice what we consider like the elements of high quality discussion, and be able to notice them on their peers and be able to name them, because then they're thinking about it when they do it themselves. So we do, for example, one of our protocols are our fish bowls, where the students on the outside are noticing how the students in the inside, and they're recording feedback to give them so they can get better discussion. And the discussion is about the content. So they're still learning the content, but they're also learning to discuss. So because it's through that discussion that they learn.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you were talking about that assessment, I get like a little sweaty and I start to cringe when I hear assess. And again, I was a high school teacher for 17 years, so it shouldn't be something that does that for me. But at the same time, if I reflect and think a little bit more deeply, I think right before I clicked record, we were talking about how I taught high school Spanish and I taught the AP level courses. And at first, when I started teaching those courses, I was a little bit weary of the rubric that they had, the scoring guidelines for all of the sections of the exam. And then I became like a reader for the exam. So I'd go and I'd have to apply them to hundreds and hundreds and thousands of student samples. And over time, I came to realize that they're not these evil, awful scoring things. And at times, yeah, they can be a little bit cold and maybe not super personal, but they have a value to them. And the value that I found was mostly actually with the speaking. And so it applies to kind of these, although it wasn't discussion, it was more presentational. And so it's a little bit different, but I guess my question here is, is there something like that, like a guideline or a rubric that's used? Because I remember the real strength of that came when I put it in the hands of my students and I asked them to rate their peers in a very like non-judgmental way. And it was in their hands and they could highlight things and say, well, here's where I think you were. And here's what do you think? And they'd all talk together. And typically they were pretty spot on. If you had the right kind of guideline created, they knew where not only they were, but where their peers were. And again, that also, I keep tying it back. You can't do that unless you have what? A community of people that trust one another. Sorry, there's a lot there. You can respond any way you want.
I totally hear you. And the what happens also is, the more students are able to identify and notice that in others, the better they get.
Sure.
Yep.
Because once you it's your turn, you're like, oh, I noticed that my peer did or didn't do this. I'm gonna try it out. And yes, we have tons of tools both for self-assessment and for assessing others, like reflections. And you know, one of the things that that I love about it is that it's all aligned. When we say, okay, discussion is, you know, there has to be speaking and listening. That will be part of the rubric. You know, when you are saying you're inviting it's diverse voices, it's like, okay, so sometimes you assess yourself and sometimes you assess the group. Mm-hmm. If it's the group where there are multiple voices, part of it. If you're assessing yourself, was I able to invite others into the conversation? Did I monitor the time that I talked? Because you
I love that question. I love that question.
So it's all how we define discussion is exactly what we're looking for. I'm a big believer that you have to teach to the test. If it's a good test, it's aligned to what you said you want to teach.
It's a great right? point.
And so, and then all the activities that you do are towards helping students become better. The test should never be a gotcha. You know, you should always go into it like, I know what they're going to ask me. I know what I need to get better at. And ideally, all your formative assessment needs mm-hmm. to be aligned to that, to be able to say, am I getting better at those skills that I say I my teacher wants me to get better at? And ideally, you know, when you're getting to the assessment as learning with kids, then they're helping you develop and decide what is it that they want to learn. But that's going a little beyond. I get too excited about
it. No, but it's relevant. And I was thinking the same thing. I was just thinking, are we going down a rabbit hole here? But the answer I think is no, because what you're basically saying is that yes, you can design an assessment and you can't both formative, let's stick there, for discussion, which yes. and one of the elements of it that you just mentioned is one that people wouldn't think too much of is, am I monitoring how much I am talking? Am I talking too much? There's an active listening component to discussion as well, right? Yes. So it is highly relevant.
Yeah. Am I paraphrasing? That's how you know that you understood. Am I asking clarifying questions? So under each of our elements, there are multiple different ways in which you could say, yeah, this student is listening to self and others, or this student is connecting, you know, we're saying that is purposeful. Are they connecting it to the content that they're learning, to the purpose of the discussion? So yeah, we had a lot of fun developing those and trying them out. And funny enough, teachers want those tools, mm-hmm. you know, because there's this big discussion about should discussion be assessed or not. And that's different from should a discussion be scored or not.
Right.
And there are many reasons to do it. I mean, some people score participation, and sometimes participation can become, did this child show up to class, right? And then we're doing a disservice because yeah. if we're truly trying to do engagement of students, is what should that engagement look like? And having, in our case, having that definition of discussion and remaining true to that, that's what we're going to focus on. And it's not just making sure the student is doing it, but making sure we are providing opportunities, we're providing protocols, and we're providing questions that are going to allow them to engage in ways we want them to engage.
Right. Multi-layered, for sure. There's a lot of directions we could go in. As we wrap up here, because we're running out of time, I have a couple more questions, but I want to really, this is an interesting time. We're recording this in the middle of July, and it will come out around the beginning of the school year. People will just be kind of getting back to school. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you a question kind of along those lines. We're just getting back to school here. Let's say that somebody has not been involved in the discussion project, has learned about, has listened to this podcast, and is starting school. What do you think? What is one thing that they should do right now as the school year begins to kind of prepare for this kind of climate that we've been discussing so that we can have these high quality discussions in class?
Well, first of all, they have to Google us, right? And look at what research
of course.
But I think that going back to where we started, like the community, creating a community is like really like when you're going to, my husband always has a garden every summer, because in Wisconsin, we only get the summer to garden.
I'm in New Hampshire, so I'm with you.
The first thing you do is just to get that your piece of dirt ready, right? You till it and you make sure that it's ready. So setting a ground for community is important, and it's and you can do it through the work that you're doing. Getting opportunities for students to get into small groups, to get into pairs. You know, everybody talks about like turn and talk. Well, if we can do meaningful turn and talks, and that kids are talking to different people, that's one way to getting kids to know each other. They're very safe ways because I only have to talk to one other person. But guess what? Tomorrow when I come into the same classroom, there's going to be that one person that I know, right? And so the more that you do those activities, so getting to build that community through the content and the small groups is one thing that, you know, you can later come to the discussion project and learn all the protocols. But that is one thing that is going to take you far. And if you can keep up that throughout the school year, you can expand that. You can always expand your knowledge around that. But that is kind of like the basis, the community mm-hmm. that you create, getting to know your students, getting to know their strengths so that you can highlight them. This is, by the way, nothing new, right? But sometimes as teachers, we need to be reminded that, yes, you're on the right path. This is the most important thing you have to do. It's like the precursor to doing anything else that you're going to do, whether it's you're going to be teaching a physics or you're going to be teaching literature. That's the common thing. And for multilingual learners, I would say this is the most important thing mm-hmm. because they're coming to schools where students, everybody else might speak a different language. Everybody else might even eat different food or be from different cultural backgrounds, or everything might look very, very different. So to find one person that I can go to is going to help me connect not just to the place and the people, but to the learning itself. And we want to create learners for life. And we want multilingual learners to be part of that team, part of right. that club.
Yeah, we say it often that building community is extremely important. The pressures of curriculum and standardized tests and everything else sometimes tell us that we need to just kind of do that as a cursory item, but that's not what it is. And so I totally agree with you. Resist that temptation to kind of get into the content right away or merge, you know, bring the content in. That's the genius behind all
that
this.
That second part, I think, is the most important, that you can do it through the content. Yeah. You know, we don't have the luxury to say, I'm going to spend a whole week getting to know my students, right. you know, and sometimes we do, but I think it's most important to do it through the learning, because that's where students find the best connections. And that's where students need the most help. And if I'm not feeling comfortable with asking the teacher, if I have a connection with somebody else in the class, it's also going to help the students widen their self-efficacy and feel just more comfortable seeking help for themselves and advocating for themselves.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I have two more questions for you. As you said, what is the first thing that a teacher should do if they want to learn more about this? Well, they should Google the discussion project. So how would you go about, how can people learn more about the work that you're doing? What's the easiest way?
Well, the easiest way is you can go to the website, and we have a website that is called discussion.education.wisc. So WISC, like in Wisconsin. .edu for education. So discussion education, WISC.edu. And you can find out about what the next, opportunities are to get engaged. Other ways that you can do is the principal investigator for all of this work is Diana Hess, who's been amazing. And she's a very productive scholar. She has a couple of books that were written for teachers. This has to do more with engaging them with controversial issues. But there's a couple of books. One is called The Political Classroom, and it's called Ethics and Evidence in Democratic Education. And it really is about, again, bringing voices and having equity. And it's not about just having equity along one side of the thinking, but really bringing all sorts of thinking and all sorts of positions into the conversation. She has another book called Controversy in the Classroom, The Democratic Power of Discussion, which is another, I read that when I was first starting to teach, and it was just wonderful. And of course, you know, you can always contact us, contact me or contact anybody else in the website and ask for resources or ask for information. And we love talking to teachers. So, and I love talking to teachers who teach multilingual learners. So
great. Well, you answered my last question as well, which was if there's a book or anything else that's influenced you. And we have two there. So we will link to the website. You can find the podcast notes on the, you can find the website of the podcast notes, but also in our community at elevationeducation.com/ELCommunity. And with that, Mariana, I just want to thank you. You've been such a great collaborator and contributor for us, and it's going to continue. I have more stuff planned for the future, which is really exciting with you and a few of your colleagues. And I just love it that we can call on you and have a nice discussion in this case about discussions.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community, where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.